Section 9. My name is Damien Hull, and I'm here with Dorothy.
Hello, and we're back again, Episode 8, to share with you our experiences, our lumps and bumps, and everything else.
So yeah, this episode, we're going to be talking about the OSI model, and this is kind of a review for us. And what we're trying to do in this episode is apply the OSI model to what we do in IT and what we do with our IT projects, because I think that's really important, especially when you get into the more advanced parts of IT where you're doing network engineering, servers, firewalls, information security is a big deal with the OSI model.
Troubleshooting.
Troubleshooting is another one too. You can use that to help you figure out what's going on with your network and why something may not be working. So let's go over the OSI model. I'm going to run through it quickly and then we can go back and analyze what's actually in each layer. So we have the physical layer, that's layer one. Then we have the data link layer, layer two. And then we have the network or IP layer, which is layer three. There's the transport layer, that's four. We have the session layer, which is five. Now we're not going to talk too much about that because you can't control five. And then we have the presentation layer, which is six. And that's another layer we're not really going to talk too much about because you don't have any control over that. And then we have the application layer. So let's talk about layer one. That's where you plug in your network cable, you have your network interface card, and the bits get dropped under the wire. That's the physical layer. And another part of that is also your wireless connection. People oftentimes don't think that the wireless connection is a physical connection, but it actually is. And then we have the data link layer, or layer two. And in here we have ARP, we have VLANs, broadcast domains, switching is part of that, and then we also have MAC address. So there's some sub-layers in there that you might want to take a look at as well, but that's the primary, that's primarily what's in the data link layer. And then we have our IP layer or network layer, and that's layer three with IP addresses, routing, ICMP is part of that. And then we have our transport layer where we have TCP and UDP, and this is how data is transferred across the network in what transport protocol are you going to be using. So for example, if you're running a web server or going to a website, that's going to be using the TCP protocol, and the destination port is going to be port 80 if you're on a client.
So ports are always a part of layer four as well, right?
So yes, ports are a part of layer four. So if you're doing SMTP for mail transfer or email, that's going to be port 25, and that's a TCP connection. If you're doing DNS and you're, let's say you're on your laptop or workstation and you open up your web browser and you want to type in google.com, well, you're going to have to look that host name up in DNS, and that's going to be using port 53, and then the transport mode for that is going to be UDP. Right. So that's kind of how that works, and we'll be talking more about that as
and,
we talk about our projects.
When you talk about and during the tools on NRAP, that would be a good way to kind of explain, you know, some of the things.
Right.
You know how it applies to that. So.
And then we have again five and six. We're not going to talk about the application layer. Layer seven is going to be interesting because that's where you have the protocol. Now we're not talking about the application itself, so we're not talking about Chrome, but we're talking about how does Chrome or the Google web browser talk along the how should I put that? How does it connect to the web server? So when I type in google.com or section9.us, how does that whole process work there? Well, the language that the web browser is going to talk in is the HTTP protocol.
Right.
So the web server and the client, the web browser, they talk using the HTTP protocol.
The protocol basically is the language they both use to communicate with each other.
Correct. That's okay. The language they're going to be using. So if you want to do FTP, there's an FTP server and there's an FTP client. They both use the FTP protocol to talk to each other.
SSH.
SSH has its own protocol. So there's an SSH client and there's an SSH server, and then the two talk using the SSH protocol. And there's different versions of these protocols. We have like HTTP version 1, there's version 2, and then we have SSH version 1, there's SSH version 2. So you have to kind of understand these things and then realize that you don't really have a whole lot of control over them, but you can specify in certain situations which protocol gets used. So for example, when you run SSH, you can actually configure the server to use only SSH version 2, and that would be the version 2 protocol, because version 1 has vulnerabilities in it that hackers can use to exploit that particular protocol and then maybe gain access to things they shouldn't have access to.
Hmm.
So that's where you can actually use the layer 7 protocols to maybe make things a little bit more secure or understand how they work. And then when we talk about Dorothy's firewall project, you can actually manipulate some of these protocols by saying, okay, I'm not going to allow SSH, I'm not going to allow FTP, but I will allow HTTP. And so you can actually allow or deny traffic based on their layer 7 protocol.
And I think for you, that is more advanced. You know, it's a good thing for me to actually listen to how you're using the OSI model versus how I'm using it. For me, when I first started listening, you know, and actually trying to learn IT just from scratch, I didn't know anything about IT. I really didn't like the OSI model. I didn't understand it. I didn't know why it was there. You know, and it was like, why do I have to memorize all of this? And you kept saying, oh, this is really, really important. And why is it important? I mean, what is it? Why the OSI model? You know, well, I found out in the older days, you know, they used to have their own definition of the OSI model for every different device. So, you know, people will have to, you know, put a network together with only the same kind of the devices, you know, from the same vendor because they didn't have a common OSI model to be able to use what was best for the network. So once that all the vendors, you know, and the community basically, I guess, got together and decided to adopt it as like their main standard, it made it a lot easier for people to put their networks more affordable in certain ways, you know. So, but for me, I think the best part is for troubleshooting. When I don't understand why something is not working, I can go, okay, which layer of the OSI model is this happening to? And I go layer by layer. Layer one, is everything plugged in? It's kind of like the IT crowd. You know, do you try turning it on and off? And you have a funny story about that when you were working for that ISP. Do you want to share that with us?
Yeah, so I used to work for an ISP, and part of our job was to provide internet services for our customers. And then we would send them equipment that we had pre-configured. And then once it got there, we would coordinate with the customer to make sure that we got all of their equipment connected. Sometimes we would have our own technicians on site, and we would talk to them and have them go through the process of setting these things up and getting them connected. But other times we would have somebody local in that particular community plug things in for us. And so I had this device, and it was a Cisco accelerator. So what it's actually going to do is it's going to kind of speed up the internet for the client. Right. And we had an old version and a new version. And the old version had an on-off switch. The new version did not. And so when I got ready to set this thing up, we ran into an issue. So we contacted the customer. We had somebody on site that was going to get ready to plug things in. And for about 15 minutes or so, we went back and forth trying to figure out why we couldn't see this particular device. And I thought, oh, maybe I made a mistake somewhere in the configuration and it's not working. Now, I did test it before we sent it out because that was one of the things we were supposed to do, is make sure the thing's working before you send it to the customer. But there's some stuff you can't really always test. It has to be on the customer's network. So I thought, well, maybe I forgot something. Maybe something's not working right. Maybe something broke. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know why we can't get this thing working. So finally, I asked the guy, I said, hey, is this thing turned on? Because the old one required you to hit the on button for it to be powered on. The new one, you just plugged it in.
And it just worked?
Yeah. Mm. So I had forgotten that we had sent them an older version. And so when they went to go plug it in, they didn't turn it on. They didn't hit that on switch. So that's something that you want to make sure you understand. You know, you don't want to be in a situation where 15 minutes later you realize, oh, we forgot to tell the guy to turn it on. Because so I assumed it was already on.
Right. You assumed that it was probably one of the new ones that the guy plugged it in. And you know, that's why for me it's so important. It doesn't matter how menial of a task it could be that I always go layer one, is everything plugged in? Is everything turned on? You know, just check every cable, do that, then move on to the next layer, you know. And you know, I find it very useful for me. It's friendlier now because the OSI has a purpose, something that serves me to understand and cut down on the time that I'm going to spend you know, fiddling with something, if I know what layer that is in, I can pinpoint and concentrate on that layer versus having to go all over the place and try to figure out what the heck, you know.
So, yeah. So what Dorothy's talking about is, and in my case, too, I think we're going to have one even for Section 9.
Right.
And for some of the labs that we're working on, sometimes when you're in a lab environment, it's worse because you're always moving things around. So first thing on your checklist should be, did we plug everything in? Is the physical layer, has that been taken care of? Did you plug it into the right port? Is the cable correct?
Right.
You know. So make sure that, you know, is the thing turned on? Mm-hmm. So that's also part of the physical layer. You need to make sure the thing is powered on. So that's step one. And then step two, layer two, where you have switching and broadcast domains. Are you in the correct VLAN?
Right.
Because in our case, we have multiple VLANs on our Section 9 lab that kind of gets a bit confusing. So that's something we're going to have to be able to monitor and check, because if we don't, we may be in a situation where something doesn't work and we haven't checked layer two and that's why it's not working.
I think it keeps the network awareness honest when you have to sit in there and try to figure out, okay. And for me, the network diagrams are really important when you're doing all the IP addressing and seeing how they connect. You know, I do that first and then try to figure out, you know, my IP addresses. And then when I plug everything in, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, are the devices talking to each other?
Right, right. So. And so one of the things that I had an issue with on our lab when I set up the VMware server is with layer three. So because we have multiple VLANs, we need to be able to talk across different VLANs. So say, for example, you have VLAN 5 and VLAN 6, and you want to be able to communicate between those two. Well, in order for that to work properly, you need what's called inter-VLAN routing. So that's where you get into layer two and layer three, where you have your VLANs. Now, okay, how do we make these two VLANs talk to each other? Routing has to be part of that. So now you're looking at layer three, IP addresses, routing, and then making sure those things are set up properly so that you have communication. So when I set up our VMware server, one of the issues I had was that things were not configured properly because we had an older configuration from a previous generation of our network. And so I ran into the situation where 15 minutes of troubleshooting, trying to figure out, okay, why isn't this working? Realizing that, okay, everything on layer two is actually correct. What's not correct is layer three. The IP addresses are not correct. Right. The routing is not correct. Fix that on our Meraki firewall. Boom, everything's working again.
And I think that, you know, all the layers serve a little layer above. You know, they do relate to the layer above. And, you know, when it comes to the network experience of the OSI, like I said, I found it really dry, really scary at the beginning. I didn't understand it. But once that you actually put it into practice, which is something that we're trying to kind of bring to you today from Damien's point of view or from my newbie point of view of the different ways that you can see it, maybe that will help into making it easier just for you as well. So.
Yeah, and so this is where we get into our certification studying or some of the things that we're trying to do with that. And my GCIH test is a perfect example of that. And all of the information security stuff that I've studied brings up this whole point about the OSI even further, because one of the things you're going to have to do is use security tools like Wireshark and packet captures to understand what's going on with the network. And there's also a side of information security where they have intrusion analysts,
right,
where you are analyzing network traffic. And that means you're looking at packets, you're looking at TCP headers, you're looking at IP headers, you're looking at layer two stuff with maybe an ARP attack of some kind where you can do ARP spoofing and people try to have traffic sent from one host to a completely different host and the attacker can then see things they're not supposed to see. So there's a combination of things going on here when you get into the information security side of things. So when you look at something like the GCIH test, now I can't talk to specifics because I don't want to give certain things away. I'm not supposed to do that. But they'll always have, in any information security thing that you do, a packet capture. And what you have to do is try to figure out, okay, what's going on in this particular packet capture? What is being, you know, displayed in this little picture, because they'll have a picture of Wireshark or some sort of packet capture, and you're supposed to figure out what's going on. And some of it may be at layer two, some of it may be at layer three, it may be a combination of things going on. There may be some layer seven happening in there, because you can actually see the HTTP protocol in some of these packet captures, or maybe there's an FTP protocol, or, or something along those lines. And you have to understand what's happening there to be able to answer the question.
Yeah, so, and once that you OSI know what layer in. It is, then you can filter for those packets and then try to figure out what's going on. And
right, right. And then sometimes they get into more detail. So right. You have the TCP header and you have an IP header, and there's things going on in there. And then there's things that you can do at the layer 2 where you have the frame lives in layer 2. That's one of the things I left out on our list here, is there's a frame at layer 2. This is part of switching and how that layer 2 stuff happens. And so you may be able to find out what's going on with layer 2 and the frames and look deeper into that layer of the OSI to figure out what it is you're trying to find. And some of these are going to help you when you try to take certification tests like the GCIH or others that have to do with information security. So this directly relates to what I'm trying to do now for my certification studying. And then we can go into tools. And again, last week we were playing around with Nmap and HPing 3. Now on the Nmap side, you can do network scans, you can try to do host discovery, but one of the things that you have to understand is that Nmap is going to do a TCP scan. It's going to do certain port numbers. By default, it's going to do the 1,000 well-known ports.
And TCP ports.
TCP ports.
It doesn't
right.
do the UDPs on that aggressive scan. And we found this out the hard way in one of our labs.
So one thing that you may want to do when you do your scans in certain situations, you may say, oh, well, there may be a UDP protocol on the network that I need to look for. Right. Well, how do you do that? Well, by default, as Dorothy's talking about, you're not going to see that. So let's say I want to see how many DHCP servers do I have on the network? Well, what protocol is DHCP? It's UDP. So if I do a TCP scan right. to see what's on the network, just to do, you know, let's say I want to do it. Maybe I go to work on a Saturday. I want to do a scan of the network to see what's going on. I got to get my authorization to do so. And then I go ahead and do a scan because maybe I'm having issues. And I actually ran into this in one situation where we had an office that was completely goofy. I couldn't figure out why people were having issues connecting to the internet. And they would call and they would say, hey, some people are connected, some people are not. I had internet early this morning. I don't have it now. It's afternoon. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? And so what I ended up doing was using Wireshark to take a look at the network traffic on a right. particular host to see, okay, what's going on with this particular host? They don't have internet some of the time. And then some of the time they do have internet. And I ended up finding out that there were multiple DHCP servers on the network. Now, one way to figure this out or check to see if this is there is if I do a UDP scan.
Correct.
And then I can put in maybe like the DHCP port numbers for that on the UDP side of things, make sure that I'm doing a UDP scan with Nmap, and then I might be able to track that down and figure out, okay, here's where my DHCP servers are. I've got too many of them. Let's go take those off the network.
See, and that's why one of the most important things that I've learned from working with you on this is that you have to know what ports. You have to know, you know, how your tools work and what the limitation of those tools are. You know, when you do your scans, you know what layer of the OSI model you're trying to look at. You know what you're trying to find out. Try to figure out why something's not working in there. So you don't have like a huge packet capture for like, you know, a boatload of things and not really narrow it down, because then you'll be looking at data for the next few hundred years.
So, right. And that's an important thing to remember, is that you can gather a lot of information with these tools, but you really do need to do what Dorothy's talking about. You need to narrow your focus down so that you're not looking in the wrong area.
Right.
You could spend hours going in the wrong direction.
It will save you time. I mean, bottom line is going to save you time. And if somebody's paying you, you know, by the hour, they're going to really want to know they can depend on you and you can get it done in the shortest period of time. And we all know IT is not a short period of time thing. What could you be think you'd take 15 minutes is 2 hours later. But if you can, you know, give yourself a break by actually sitting down and narrowing things down, I think it'll make it a lot easier. But do you want to share the story about the difficulties we had with HPing 3?
Yeah, so the first thing that I did was I set up a little lab for us on our VMware server. So we had an Ubuntu server set up as a web server with Apache, and then we had a couple of Kali Linux boxes up and running so that we can do Nmap scans and use HPing 3. And then I had the UFW firewall configured on our Ubuntu server to block certain things. And one issue that I ran into, and I'm still looking into this, so I don't have a lot of details yet, but when we were doing the host discovery or using the host discovery feature of Nmap, it actually came back and said this host is up and running, even though I had ICMP packets blocked using the UFW firewall. And I'm going to have to go back and take a look at the configuration on the firewall side that's actually on our Ubuntu server and see if I did that correctly. Mm-hmm. And then try to figure out what's going on with Nmap. But yeah, when we talk about HPing 3...
So everybody was saying it was such a good tool or whatever, so we thought, score, let's try it out.
Right. So originally, we tried HPing 3 months ago. I mean, last year sometime, we tried to do something with it. And we gave up real quickly because we realized that when you type in HPing 3, we thought it was going to do a regular ping by default. So we typed in HPing 3, gave it an IP address, and we got nothing back.
Right.
And it's important to understand how to use these tools because, you know, when it doesn't respond the way that you think it should, that doesn't necessarily mean that a host is down or there's something wrong with the network. It could be that you're using the tool wrong and you don't understand how it works. So in our case, we could ping the device with regular ping. You type in ping, you give it the host name or IP address, you get something back.
Right.
Use HPing 3, give it the host name or IP address as a target, you hit enter, you get nothing.
Well, you got 100% packet loss.
Yeah, and so right there, it's like, okay, well, let's get rid of HPing 3 because we don't know how to use it. Something's not right. We're not doing something right.
Right.
So we kind of gave up on it years ago and just decided, okay, let's just stick with regular tools. We're going to use ping, we're going to use regular traceroute, and we're going to be happy with that until we have time to figure out how to use HPing 3.
Right.
And I was actually introduced to HPing 3 when I took the GSEC certification test. And you know, I went to the training, and one of the things we actually used was HPing 3. But we didn't do a whole lot with it, and that's why I was still having issues with it when we tried it last week.
But we did find out that the 100% packet loss is because that's what it actually sent back when the ports that it was trying to scan were filtered.
Right. And so first thing we have to say is that by default, HPing 3 is using TCP. So this is, again, where we go back to our OSI model, layer 4, transport layer. Are we doing UDP or TCP?
Well, and it has different modes as well. You know, you can do ICMP mode, you could do TCP mode, you could do UDP. So that's one of the things that we found out. And actually, we found that out on your SANS cheat sheet.
Right, right. So there are some SANS cheat sheets that talk about HPing 3. But I don't think those are enough. When you're first starting out with HPing 3, you need to look at the documentation.
Right.
You need to practice, and you need a lab environment where you can do different things with it. So, but because HPing 3 is using TCP by default, there are some options you can plug in there that make it work the way, well, how should I say this? It allows you to do some interesting things, but you have to sort of build a TCP packet with HPing 3.
Right.
And apply certain settings to that TCP header
to be able to get the information that you want. So
here's an example. We can use the dash S option to set the SYN flag on a TCP packet.
Dash capital S.
Mm-hmm. So the actual command is HPing 3. You give it a target, so it's an IP address or host name.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use a dash P and a port number. So, for example, if you want to try this on a web server, you can put in port 80. So it would be HPing 3, target host, dash P, 80, and then dash capital S for that SYN packet.
Right.
And then what this is going to do is it's going to send out a SYN packet. And for the TCP three-way handshake, again, we're going back to the OSI model and learning how these different things work. You have to understand how TCP communication happens across the network.
Right.
So there's a three-way handshake, and you have your SYN,
and you have SYNAC,
and then you have an ACK.
Mm-hmm.
So the client is going to send out the SYN, the person that's initiating the communications process. We send out a SYN, we get a SYNAC back, and then we do an ACK to say, yes, we're going to establish communications.
Right. So it's like you send the message, the ACK to acknowledge it, and then the SYNAC to acknowledge it, and then the ACK to say, okay, go ahead, now we can talk.
Yeah, now we can talk. So when we do HPing 3, target dash P 80 dash capital S, we're saying send a packet using the TCP protocol at layer 4 to port 80 of the destination IP or host. And then with that SYN flag set on your TCP packet or header, we're saying to the other side, acknowledge, send us back that SYNACK. And so if port 80 is open, and if we are allowed to go out through port 80 on the network side of things, and we reach that destination,
right,
then we know there's port 80 available on the other side if we get that SYNACK back. So you can use this in various ways to test out firewall rules, to see if something on the other side has a particular port open. You could check for things like SSH by maybe using the same kind of situation, and you would just change your dash P, which is the port option, to maybe port 22 to see if a particular system has SSH available on that particular host.
Yeah.
And then as Dorothy was saying, there's different modes. So if you want to use HPing 3 to do a basic ping, you can do the, you type in HPing 3, and then you would do a dash dash ICMP, because that's what ping uses. That's the protocol that ping is using.
And they also have a number if you don't want to be doing the dash dash ICMP. But we were having a hard time getting it to work like that, right?
So you have to understand there's like, I forget what the numbers are, but there's like a 1, a 2, a 3.
Right.
And then those correspond to
the
ICMP or TCP or UDP or stuff like that. But if you do dash dash ICMP and then you give it a target, an IP address or host name.
Right.
Then it's going to work just like regular ping, and you shouldn't have any issues with that, assuming you are allowed to actually ping that particular host.
Right. Because one of the things we found out is that you had the firewall configure a certain way to not allow any ICMP traffic. So it wasn't really that we were...
Right. That was another thing that I did too. So on our Meraki firewall that's connecting us to the internet on our Section 9 network here, I turned off ICMP. I said, do not allow ICMP out of the network. So... And that was kind of, I did that so that we could figure out, okay, how can we use the tools like, HPing 3? What options do we need to use in HPing 3 to try to see if we can reach certain hosts on the network or on the internet itself, Section 9 and maybe some others? And, you know, it was kind of a way for us to figure out how to use the tool and force us to try to look at some of these options so that we can make it work the way it was supposed to.
But then we got the surprise that it still said the host was up. And that's not some kind of information that you want to give out, right?
It depends on how you want to do that. So,
security-wise, it's not really something that you want.
It depends. Yeah. It depends. Okay. So, and that's something that we'll have to take a look at.
Right.
But now let's go ahead and look at your firewall project. And how does this OSI model, and using some of our tools that we have now, Nmap, HPing 3, and the fact that we know how to use HPing 3 a little bit, we can actually specify port numbers and such. And we know that it's using TCP by default. We can set our flags and all of that.
Right.
So how do we use all of this together with your firewall project? So, for example, we can say, okay, on your firewall, and we're talking about your pfSense firewall. You have it installed. It's all up and running. But we haven't done anything with it yet beyond saying, okay, it's up and running and we have internet access.
Right. So we want to know what kind of traffic we want to allow it in and out of the firewall, right?
So one thing that you can do that's really basic is you can say, okay, I'm going to go into the firewall rules and I'm going to say, we're not going to allow ICMP traffic in and out of the network. You can block it on the WAN side so nobody can ping your firewall. You can also say no ICMP traffic is allowed outside the network. So when somebody tries to ping something on the internet, it's not allowed. You're going to block that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a way you can use your OSI and the different protocols you have, in this case, ICMP at layer 3 of the OSI.
Right.
And you can block that. And again, you can also go at the layer 7 of the OSI and say, okay, I don't want anybody using FTP. Let's block that.
Okay.
I don't want anybody using, what do we call that, peer-to-peer file sharing. Let's block that. I don't want anybody to be doing games. Maybe there are certain protocols for games.
Right.
You might be able to do something there. I haven't really played too much with layer 7 rules where you block things or allow things by protocol. So we'll have to take a look and see what kind of options you have in pfSense to be able to do that kind of thing. But that's one of the things that's part of the new next-gen firewalls that have that layer 7 capability.
Yeah. By the way, talking about protocols... pfSense remove PPTP as one of the protocols because they don't consider it safe. They don't consider it secure because it uses MSChap version 2, and that has been hacked, apparently can be hacked 100%. So I had a little bit of an issue because I know there's still some people that are using that. So can you, I'm still having.
So this
so
is
explain that to me because I don't get it.
Yeah. So this is something else where the OSI model comes into play. So we're going to have to take a look at that particular situation, PPTP, and figure out, okay, where in the OSI model does this live? Is it layer 7? Is it at a different layer? But the point I think that's really useful for us in this particular situation is to understand, hey, there's this protocol out there that's used for VPNs, and they're saying we don't want to use that because it's not secure. So I think in your particular case, where you're at right now, and even for me, because this is kind of advanced, one of the things that we can say in this particular situation is, okay, here we have a protocol for VPNs. They're saying it's not secure. Oh, it's a protocol. It's the way that systems communicate.
They communicate.
Let's look for a different communication protocol that we can use that's more secure than this one.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things that you want to take a look at. If somebody says this protocol is dead, it's because it's not secure. Let's look for a new one. And like if you do SSH.
Well, and I was doing some research on that. But then, you know, the reality is that people still are using that in some of their enterprise environments. And to me, I need to understand that because as a beginner, if I were to get a network, administrator or network engineering job and somebody's using PPTP and, you know, oh, well, we've been using it forever. And how am I going to justify that if I don't have an option? So I'm going to have to look into that.
You may need to be in that kind of situation. You want to understand your different protocols for whatever it is you're trying to work with. So in the case of VPNs, there's multiple protocols. So one of the things you might be able to look at is IPsec. Can I set up an IPsec VPN connection?
Well, that's you have more secure? Three different solutions that you can use: the IPsec, OpenVPN, and L2TP. And one of the things that I found out.
Well, so OpenVPN is a little bit different. So I don't know if OpenVPN is a protocol.
Well, it's not. You know, one of the things that when I was doing the research, and I'm talking, I didn't say more of a protocol, was more of a solution, is because when I was doing the research, they were talking about interoperability with other devices. And I found out that a lot of the devices, most of them have IPsec, you know, or some kind of IPsec on it, but not all of them had OpenVPN. So,
no,
you know,
and so
and one of the things that they were saying is that a lot of them use the IPsec because, again, it gives you, you can use three different kinds of devices. It doesn't tie you to a certain firewall. It doesn't tie you to a certain.
No. So, you know, one of the things that you need to understand about that is that IPsec is built into Windows. So you can use IPsec with Windows. You can use IPsec with maybe a Mac. Mac might have IPsec in there. So that would be like OS X.
Right.
Then some of your mobile devices already have IPsec built in.
Yeah, most of them aren't.
As a protocol, that might be something you want to take a look at because it works with a lot of different devices. And then you can also say, hey, IPsec is more secure than things like your PPTP.
Right. But the PPTP is also, you know, used in Windows, right?
Well, yeah. So that's something that you need to do your homework on is figuring out, okay, why are people using this? What's going on? And what's, you know, how do I justify the change from PPTP to something like IPsec or something else?
Well,
why would you use something like OpenVPN?
You mentioned that a lot of people are using PPTP with IPsec because they know that PPTP just encapsulates and IPsec makes it more secure. I don't know.
So that's something you're going to have to take a look at because there's a lot of details in there that you're going to have to do your research on and figure out, okay, how does this stuff work? But there's a lot going on. The whole point that we want to make here is that even when you're putting together something like a VPN connection, there's port numbers you have to take a look at. There's protocols you have to take a look at. There's some security issues you have to take a look at which relate to protocols. Like you're saying, PPTP doesn't or is not secure anymore. So why do we have that? So there are different things that you're going to have to take a look at. And for your OSI or for your VPN project that you're working on with pfSense, the OSI is something you have to bring to the table because you have to understand how are these different systems going to talk to each other. And the OSI can help you figure some of that out with your IP addressing, your protocols, the languages they're using to talk to each other, which one's secure, which one's not, how am I going to implement all of this?
Port numbers.
So all of that applies when we're talking about the OSI and VPN connections in your project.
Right.
And that's really what we're trying to get people to understand in this episode is that the OSI is a big part of everything we do in IT.
Right. So, I mean, to me, like I said, it's a very valuable tool. I went from thinking, oh my God, I want nothing to do with this part of IT. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to memorize it. Why do I need it? To realizing that questions about the OSI get asked on interviews. You know, there isn't a job, you know, in network, you know, that I have some people that are friends of mine and they work in networking and they're always, you know, and this is layer this and this is layer three and this is layer two. And you need to know what's in layer two. You need to know what's in layer three. You need to know your layers and you need to know, like I said, for me as a newbie, troubleshooting is really important. I don't have a lot of time to be sitting in there trying to figure out the world. If I can pinpoint what part of the OSI layer it is, then I can focus on that layer and go, okay, like if it's a layer three, do I have connectivity? Why don't I have connectivity? What am I supposed to ping this, ping that? You know, just, I think I find it very useful for you as your tools, you know?
Right, right.
So, I mean, and for any of you, it could be, you know, whatever it is you're working on, you figure out your layer and you do that. So if this helps you guys understand and appreciate the value of the OSI, that's what we really kind of wanted to bring home today.
So. Yeah, yeah. And we're going to be doing more with this. We're going to be doing some research. We're going to be double checking things. One of the things I have to do is kind of more advanced. I need to know what's in the IP header. I need to know what's in the TCP header, the UDP header. These are things that are going to be on tests. These are things that I'm going to need to know when I look at the packet captures. These are things I'm going to need to know when we set things like flags using HBing 3. So they're things
I'm going to be doing a lot of research. And I think it'll help you understand HBing 3 better.
Yeah, and it is. And it is. So we're going to be doing our homework over the next few months probably, because this is something that we're going to carve out time to go back to our OSI and learn all of these details, because I need to know them if I want to go further, especially if I want to do something like the GCIA, which is the certification test from SANS that goes into intrusion analyst. And then you're doing nothing but using the OSI all day long because you're analyzing network traffic, which is something that you do in information security.
Well, and for me, on my NetPlus certification, you know, I go and I look at the tests and they ask these questions. I don't think I could sit in there and answer them without having the hands on and what we're working on, because otherwise, I mean, you know, I can read it until the cows come home and I can memorize it, but truly understanding what it does. And when they ask you that kind of question, you know, is this a right protocol to do this and the other? And will it work this way? And what part of, you know, that's just something that playing with the devices, get a lab, you know, do certain things, or maybe listen to our pod and go through our labs. And if any of it helps you, then that's what we're here for. So,
yeah, I think that's it for now. Let's see here. What else we got in our list? No, I think that's it.
Yeah.
You can get our show notes at section9.us. And if you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.
Yeah. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.
See you next week.